Yeah, the alternate title to this talk is How Linux Graphics Sucks and What We're Doing About It. So we've been talking about the Linux graphics stack and what we ought to do for I don't know how many years now. I think this is one of the few times where we have a bunch of kernel code to back up the discussion. So we'll be walking through kind of what the stack looks like now and what we kind of like to move it to, and hopefully get a little discussion, because there are some controversial bits potentially and some interfaces that people may or may not like or may want to see different. So we'll go into it. So this is just the, like I said, we'll go through the kernel changes that we've got today in the DRM tree. And what kind of other stuff we're going to need that's going to be outside of the DRM tree. And then talk about some of the user land external interfaces, the ioctl interfaces we've got for memory management and mode setting and output control and stuff. And I'll talk about what the latest status is as of like last week when I updated these, and what we've got to do, what's remaining. So this should be familiar to most people. We've got, kind of three big chunks of video management in the kernel or user space. VGAcon being the most basic one, the text mode you see when most PCs start up.
Can we get the room lights down a little bit so I can wait that? Thank you.
You got AV. Oh.
Don't want it too dark. So VGAcon, everyone knows what that is. It's a nice, fast text mode. You can do some base of modes with it, but it's not really that featureful in terms of graphics. There's the frame buffer layer, which is kind of nice for embedded systems especially. So there's some argument on that point. We'll talk about some of the limitations there. But the FB layer, since it takes advantage of devices, requires specific device drivers. If you don't have a specific device driver, but you're VESA compatible, you can use that, but you don't get many features. And it's also needed for non-PC platforms, basically, that don't boot up into text mode and give you int 10. And it also provides a console driver layer via FBCon. So if you're using the frame buffer layer, that's what you're going to get for your console.
And penguins.
And penguins. You get the penguins at boot time, which is kind of cool. But we're going to get better than that. And then there's the user space side, which is X, DirectFB, Mesa. There's some standalone bits in Mesa. The nice thing about all the user land bits is that they give you basically access to all of the features of the hardware, at least in some combination. If you're using DirectFB, maybe you'll just get video acceleration or some 2D acceleration or something. But if you're using DRMX and Mesa, generally you get access to the most features of the device, which is often what you want. So this is kind of, I wish I had a laser pointer. For people that aren't necessarily familiar with the stack, it's really ugly. And it took me kind of a long time to wrap my head around what all the pieces were in our current architecture. And I haven't wrapped my head around why so many of the pieces are the way they are. But this is basically what it looks like. You've got the DRM drivers and the frame buffer drivers in the kernel. Your graphics hardware is down there at the bottom. And then a bunch of kind of user land stuff that has some duplication with what the kernel stuff does. So you can see in the current way things work, if you're using X and DRM, the X drivers typically are the ones that are programming your modes straight to the graphics hardware. In some cases, you might be using a frame buffer for that, but often it's the X drivers directly. The Mesa drivers will then talk usually via ring buffers of some kind down to the DRM layer to do all of your 3D acceleration and sometimes your 2D acceleration. And the DRM drivers provide services like memory mapping that stuff in and managing the DMA rings and doing the interrupts and stuff. And then you can see there's some duplication on the FB side because it does some mode setting as well. Interestingly, the FB layer inside the kernel has some acceleration for FBCon, but it's not that easy to get at that from user space. You could use one of the DirectFB drivers and get something similar to what X provides, but that's not that common, I think. So basically, all those layers that we just saw are missing some functionality or maybe it's not integrated as well as it could be. So like FBCon's accelerated, but it doesn't expose an acceleration API because, you know, doing a bunch of system calls to Blit, people didn't want to do. You can use DirectFB, but you're not going to get like full-on 3D and stuff generally. And then DRMX and Mesa, I think most people would agree that they'd probably rather not have to run something like that, but that's where we're at today. But at least it's not binary only, unless you're using NVIDIA. There's a lot of duplication of functionality. FB and X both try to provide mode setting. These days, X provides a pretty advanced mode setting via the new render extension and a bunch of driver changes. So you can do neat things like display on external outputs dynamically. DirectFB and X provide the 2D acceleration stuff. Memory management is a total mess. You don't have memory management, basically, with the current stuff. Suspend, resume, you know, works if you're lucky, or if you have a PC that you can run VB tool post on. Maybe it won't work. Maybe it'll hang your machine. And if you're running the frame buffer drivers and the DRM drivers at the same time, good luck. You know, usually that'll just wedge my machine. So what we would like out of a graphics stack is to get the full functionality of the device, like I talked about. You want to be able to do 3D. You want to be able to do nice 2D and output control, video playback accelerated if possible, tear-free, good stuff like that. You want suspend resume to be as fast as possible and reliable. Oftentimes, if you use the VBE tool post method, you end up running the ROM that from the device, and that can take a long time, so it's slow, and you also get a lot of flicker because it might go into text mode first and then flick back to some graphics mode. Debug support would be really cool. For instance, if your machine wedges and a panic happens, you want to be able to see that rather than just have a stuck X and have to reboot your machine or set up a serial console or something. You want the various bits of drivers to kind of interact better. So memory management is one key place for this, but also mode setting. I mean, you'd like, you know, one good set of mode setting code, not a bunch of mode setting code all over the place. And I think a lot of people would agree with me that not having to run X to do graphics stuff would be a big plus. So like I said before, the DRM and X stuff, along with Mesa, provide the access to the most functionality devices. You get the nice output controls, good mode setting stuff, and 3D. But you know, there are aspects of the stack that are kind of subpar, and we don't get all the features there at the top, even with that stack. And also, any changes that we make have to be compatible. So they have to be compatible with the current X installations, frame buffer applications, whatever. So we don't want to break any of that. So what we've done to the DRM, because the DRM in combination with Mesa and X kind of provide the biggest set of features, we figured, well, let's just add kind of the mode setting code that X has, which is very nicely abstracted and has support for a lot of devices. Well, okay, that's an overstatement. It has support for Intel and Radeon devices. But they're well supported. Like, you can do dynamic output control and set modes without using the BIOS, and it's, well, except for Atom BIOS, but that's a separate topic. But anyway, it's a nice scheme, and it's a superior to what we have with FB. And plus, the DRM is required if you want to do 3D and some of the other things like video playback anyway. So adding a sophisticated mode setting layer to the DRM seemed to make sense. So Keith and Eric did the initial render implementation, the 1.3 render implementation for X and the 1.2 implementation, and ported the Intel driver over to it, and since then, several other drivers have been ported to it. So we've got these really nice drivers that are well abstracted in the X server. Maybe really nice is an overstatement, but we've got drivers that have good abstractions, and the new code for doing this mode setting is actually really nice. So we were able to just take that and put it into the DRM drivers on the kernel side. And the DRM just kind of inherited a similar abstraction layer, a similar set of structures and callbacks to what the X server already has. So we were able to get the Intel driver up and running pretty quickly. And we also added suspend resume support to the DRM layer. So that the DRM actually gets called when you do a suspend resume, so that we can reliably do the suspend resume without having to use the BIOS. Panic oops is something we haven't added yet, but we think we know how to do it. And then there are several external APIs that I talked about for mode setting, output control, enumerating your outputs, and turning them on and off, and memory management, which is one of the big missing pieces. So the new architecture may not look a lot better, but it is. So you've got the DRM layer, which kind of subsumes the role that the frame buffer stuff had, so providing a compatibility layer for existing frame buffer applications. But the DRM also provides you with the mode setting and memory management and all of the existing features it provides you with today. So your X drivers and Mesa stuff can sit on top of it unchanged. Well, aside from the changes that were needed to do the memory management stuff in the first place, but that was a separate effort. So we have a simpler system, and the kernel can stand alone. So you could boot up your kernel without X and do mode setting and do graphics stuff and have the same sorts of feature set that you would get with X today, which is a big selling point, I think. And one of the other possibilities that gives us is the ability to do a standalone Mesa implementations on top, so that you could just get X out of the way. You just want to do some 3D application. Why would you need to use X? So you could do a Mesa sitting directly on top of these new kernel interfaces, or you could do whatever applications you wanted. It gives you a lot of power. So now we'll dig in a little bit to the basic structures, unless there are any questions about that. So there's a top-level GPU configuration object that we added. So for every video device in your system, you'll get a list of the available CRT controllers, which is basically how many independent displays you can drive. The list of outputs, your actual physical output connectors. I think we may have to add an abstraction for encoders, the DACs that are attached to various chips. You'll have your list of frame buffers, your actual scanout buffers, and other memory associated with your GPU. And also, if you are on, say, an embedded machine or something, and your display doesn't have EDID data, you may have to program a custom mode from user space and load that into the kernel. So that gets added to the top-level configuration object. So each of those objects is linked in to that top-level object. And the three important ones are the CRTC, the outputs, and the frame buffers. The CRTC is kind of a misnomer. It stands for CRT controller. But it's generally just a pixel pump going out to one or more outputs. So that has a current mode, your 1280 by 800 or whatever refresh rate, and it has some associated scanout buffer with the memory that you actually are seeing displayed on the screen, and it has an offset, so you could have multiple displays that are displaying different windows into a given frame buffer, or you could do panning or whatever. And then the output objects will actually contain a whole list of modes that a given output can support. So you plug in a monitor, it probes the EDID and figures out, okay, these modes are modes that are available on this output. So you'll get all of those, which are important. And you can get other information about the display, like what the pixel format is or how big the display is, so you can calculate DPI. And then the user added modes I talked about. And then the frame buffers would just be chunks of memory. And that ties into the memory manager. So this was one of the fun pieces we discovered about the current scheme versus going to the new scheme. The current code, I kind of alluded to this on that early architecture slide, that the initialization of the kernel driver is driven by user space, and it's kind of a mess. So the X comes up, the 2D driver binds to the DRM device, and then tells the DRM driver, okay, go register an IRQ now, or you can allocate your register space now. You can map your registers now. So this is kind of ridiculous. So the initialization requirements for the new stuff, obviously, the driver has to do all of this itself, so it becomes kind of like a real Linux driver. And dealing with the compatibility of running an old X and a new X that's aware of this stuff is kind of a pain, but we think we have an idea of how we're going to deal with that, and we'll get to that later. But basically, the drivers have to do what a regular driver does, go discover all the devices, map in the registers so that it can actually talk to the device by itself, and do suspend and resume before you brought up any user space components. Set up your command rings depending on your device. initialize the memory manager, figure out how much memory is available in your graphics card, set that up, discover and enumerate the output configurations, maybe via ECPI or by actually probing, and then look for attached displays. So when you start up, you have some kind of display. And then set up an initial mode if needed. So this is something that is pretty easy to configure if you want to. So you could come up in a mode where you get a traditional kind of frame buffer type console or a text console, or you could say, I don't want to see anything until a user land program starts up and gives you some sort of fancy cube-like VT display. So this required lots and lots of low-level driver updates and some DRM core changes. And I think that stuff is still kind of a work in progress. But we have it working. So like I said, there's lots of legacy concerns with all these changes, because the current architecture is just such a mess that dealing with the compatibility is a real issue. So like I said, the memory management's a mess. So you run an old X on a new system. The new driver's already allocated its memory and set up its memory manager. Well, X might just stomp all over it. So that's a big problem. You know, the X driver might try to mode set over what the kernel driver has, and then the kernel driver won't know what mode it's in, and then may not be able to print out a panic groups or something like that. Or if the X driver is doing register accesses while the DRM driver is doing it, you know, who knows what could happen. Usually bad things. So the idea that we've come up with so far is to make this kind of a distribution flag, either as a config option or a runtime option. And I think we have to fully implement it and try running a bunch of different combinations to see which way is best. But the bottom line is that if you've got your old user space, you'll probably have to run the driver in a different mode that won't give you access to some of the new features we talked about. And it could be, like I said, compile or runtime. And obviously, we don't want to break people's existing installations. So when you go build a new kernel that has all this stuff in it, it should just work. You just leave it in the old style, and then choose the new style if you have a user space that's up for it. And this could be a per DRM driver flag, or it could be a DRM global flag, whatever works best. So there are some other kernel bits outside of the DRM that we're going to need to mess with to get some of these features too. So one of them that I would like to see that isn't actually a hard requirement is having the DRM driver bind to the PCI device. We have a kind of a workaround for this using the device model that we get suspend resume notifications even though we're not bound to the PCI device. So like I say, it's not a strict requirement, but it would be kind of nice to bind to it so that the FB drivers don't bind to it and then hose things for us. And then panic oops support. So you know, we talked about this a few years ago at Kernel Summit. We could do this potentially with the existing KD text mode, but I think that would introduce some problems that we'd rather not have to deal with. So the best thing to do would be to do a new KD mode for kernel graphics. And the nice thing about a new mode is that it would just be very clear, the semantics would be very clear, the kernel owns the graphics device, and you know, don't mess with it. And I think this can get us away from having the X server run as root. It can get us away from the KD graphics where we assume that user space owns it and we have to do VT switching at suspend resume time. So in KD kernel graphics mode, we wouldn't do any of that. We would just leave whatever's running because the kernel's going to suspend resume correctly. And in this new mode, we could just have the panic oops stuff blit right over the existing screen. Or we could have a spinning cube with your panic output on it, which would be kind of cool. The other day, someone was talking about having a Star Wars style scroll back into the distance of your of your back trace, which I think would be a lot of fun. But once we have this in place, people can really, we can take votes and stuff, and we can have a blue penguin of death, we could have the red penguin of death, whatever we want to do. But I think by default, and you know, distros are probably going to want to be conservative about this, and not generally change the mode. So you just take the existing mode, set up your frame buffer console dumb driver to just write text into whatever your current mode is, Because changing the output is going to rely on a lot of data structures and parts of the kernel working. And if you've panicked, you probably don't want to do that. But, you know, Ubuntu can have their Splash plugin for it. So there's a whole bunch of new external interfaces for this stuff, obviously, because you want to be able to do your mode setting and figure out what outputs are available on your platform and allocate video memory, which is a really novel idea. So we've got a new memory manager, and I think the interfaces are settled down. Dave told me that they're set in stone now, except for a single compatibility fix that we have to do before 2.6.25 comes out, right? And we'll need to deal with the pinning of the scanout buffers for different stuff, but I think that's actually taken care of now. The output control, we've got a bunch of new interfaces for that. So you have some ioctls that say, okay, give me the configuration. Kernel feeds back to you, okay, you've got a VGA out, you've got a DVI out, and you've got a built-in LVDS screen. Gives you all the modes associated with it. And then the output control will let you go change the mapping. So you can say, well, I want my LVDS to be cloned with my VGA, and then I want extended desktop on my DVI or whatever. And then you pass the kernel in a chunk of memory you've allocated via memory management to act as your scanout buffer there. And then the mode setting, obviously. So you list all of your modes and program to whatever you need. Some of the ugly things we have to deal with are kind of in the mode setting realm. Some monitors lie to us about what they're capable of. And so we have a set of quirks, like in the X server and the drivers, to deal with that. So we'll need something like that, probably just in user space. The kernel boots up, and then RD loads something from a list, because we already have the interfaces for adding custom modes. So you could just trash the kernel ones, because you know they're bogus, and load in a new one. And that's also nice for, like I said, embedded situations, where you don't want to have a whole EDID and I2C setup. So those cover all the basic functionality we think we'd want from the new system. And this is where we're at today. We've got a branch in the DRM tree called Mode Setting 101. It's based on the Rander 1.2 code from the Intel driver and the Core X server. And like I said, there are a couple of changes we would like to make to it, but the basics are all in place. So the low-level drivers can call all these new functions to manage their CRTCs and outputs, and it's starting to look like a regular Linux driver layer, which is kind of cool. We've got DDC probing in the kernel using the existing I2C stuff. The external APIs are prototype. Memory management took a little while to settle down, but I think it's in good shape now. The output control, we've recently made a few changes to, but it's also looking pretty good. I mean, the functionality is there. It's just a matter of how friendly we want to make the interface. And there's applications running on this. So we've got some products we're working on right now that use this. There are some embedded applications using it. So it's definitely usable at this point. It's in a poker machine. So it's cool stuff.
It was originally written for a poker machine.
Yeah, so Dave and I have been working with a guy from Tungsten on this stuff, and I had posted a patch to the DRI devel list saying, okay, yeah, we should finally get around to doing this. And Dave then got a contract to go do SDVO support for it right away. So like the next day, I saw this tree appear in the DRM tree, and this branch appear in the DRM tree, and Dave checked in this huge chunk of code that just worked on my machine, which is pretty awesome. But there's still a lot to be done. So there's the kind of massaging of the APIs that I talked about. DRM Core still needs a lot of work in order to do that new style, old style split I talked about. And I've got to port more of the Intel output stuff to the kernel. Right now we've got SDVO, which is your basic DVI support on a desktop machine, LVDS for the laptop. And I think there's TV there, but it's not ported yet. So the TV stuff needs to be ported, and the DVO stuff, which is an older version, an AGP-based external add-in card version. of DVI type output for older Intel chips. So we've got to pull that stuff over and pull over a bunch of bug fixes. I've been working a lot on the 2DX driver to fix a lot of the kind of nagging bugs that we've had since we moved over to native mode setting on the X side. So I've got to port over all those fixes too. But all the stuff is in place, so that's pretty easy to do. And panic oops is something we've got to add still too. Both Dave and I have looked at it and both said, oh, this isn't quite as trivial as we were hoping, because it involves hacking on the VT layer, which is not a fun place to be. Like I said, the external interfaces we've still got to play around with, but they're all working. I915 and Radeon are there. If anyone wants to port other drivers to these interfaces, it'd be awesome. I think the Nouveau guys, they're always on the bleeding edge, so they're probably thinking about it already. And then on the X side, I've been trying to port our 2D driver to sit on top of this so that it won't do any mode setting anymore. It'll just call into the kernel to do it like magic. And DirectFB could sit on this. Standalone Mesa could use this. I'm hoping that once this stuff gets upstream, people will kind of go crazy with it. I think there's a lot of possibilities here. It should be a really nice feature to have. And then there's some kind of bigger open questions to think about for the future. One thing is that, so if we do like a standalone Mesa system, Mesa mainly does 3D stuff, but to make it better for a windowing system to sit on top of without having separate drivers in the windowing system, it might be nice to have a few operations added as extensions to Mesa. But that's something, so Keith thinks that this is not possible to do in a performant way, but the Mesa guys say, no, it is, and you just have to write an extension. But no one's written the extension, so we have to look at that at some point. And I think once this stuff goes upstream, people will start using standalone Mesa a lot, and so we'll probably get this question answered relatively quickly. So that would centralize some more features. But glucose is kind of a proof of concept for that. And there's some other things we could do in the kernel. The Intel hardware and some of the new ATI and NVIDIA hardware, well, even their old stuff, we're kind of behind the times, can do some interesting things with the graphics page tables. And they can do interruptible graphics operations. So the early graphics devices kind of operated on a run-to-completion model. You'd feed it a big program, and it would crunch on it until it was done, and then you'd go on to the next one. But if you've got a really big program or a program with loops in it or something, you may want to interrupt it in the middle of it. So this gives us, it kind of raises the question of whether we should schedule the graphics, the GPU, a little bit more like we do the CPU, tie it into the CPU scheduler somehow or something. Because if you are running some big graphics program and your graphics chip is busy, you know, that could add latency to your display, and so you may end up, you know, getting hiccups or whatever. So we may want to be smarter about this in the future, but it depends on how people are using the graphics device too. Mouse control. So Jacob just added cursor stuff to the DRM tree. So we've got some cursor control there, but I think eventually we may want to move the actual cursor register updates to the kernel just so that we can do it totally in interrupt context. So you'll never see your cursor lag. That was one thing that we discovered at SGI. Doing some user studies, people really hated it when their mice didn't move. They'd think the machine was wedged and they'd power it off. So that was one of the most important things that you could do, is make sure the mouse was always smooth. So moving this into the kernel would let us do that. And it's just a small amount of code, so it'd be kind of a neat thing to do. Although MPX would have a problem with it, I think. Yeah, so input transformation would be hard. Software cursors would be more code. But I don't know, it's just an idea. Or fix the hardware, yeah. So that's all I've got. Hopefully people have questions and stuff or suggestions about how we could improve this. You can just pull down the tree on your laptop and look real quick. Ben.
Memory might be able to page in and page out. And so we get into a very interesting situation where we might want to coordinate those things. And I'm curious about whether that's been already thought out and there is approach or the direction being defined there, or it's just your...
So you're right, for some of the new devices, we can actually do paging of the graphics memory. We haven't implemented that, though. And the current memory manager doesn't even track the pin memory for operations right now. It doesn't track it against our limit or something. And that's an open issue with TTM, the memory manager. But it should. Although, on the plus side, the operations are typically not that long-lived. So the pinning is going to be pretty transient. And you'll probably want to just account it against a single process like the X server or the DRM master process.
Yeah.
Well, you're not in control of how much is going to be in flight necessarily. That's going to be driven by your applications.
Well, without having some sort of GPU scheduler, you can't really do that at the moment. Which is like we have a sort of a plan, but it's definitely not the next thing we're going to get done because we can have all of the memory manager and all of the surrounding bits in the kernel, and we've worked on that. Adding the GPU scheduler is quite hard. We have actually thought about some of that stuff. Keith Packard in Intel as well. We've talked pretty heavily about how we're going to get it on Intel hardware so that we don't pin unnecessarily, or that on pin. Currently, even the unpinned pages aren't swappable. So you allocate a graphics object; it's pretty much it's memory. You can't swap out the disk. So we're trying to at least arrange it so that and the current that's the way the current system works. It's even nothing gets swapped. So. Yeah, what we want to be able to do is start allocating objects, and only when they're being pinned to the GART and pinned into the graphics card space, then they're only pinned in the VM. Otherwise, they can get swapped out.
And this gets a lot trickier when you have dedicated VRAM. So a lot of the prototyping we've done is on Intel, where we have UMA. But if you've got dedicated VRAM, not only do you have to deal with pinning your PCIe GART stuff, but you've also got to deal with migration from back and forth between VRAM and main memory.
Yeah, dedicated... Dedicated VRAM brings in a whole other world of pain, especially on things like suspend and resume. If you've got a 512 meg video RAM on your card, suspend resume operation will drop. S3 on most graphics cards will just wipe the video RAM. So you have to bring back in as much of that video RAM that's pinned or is not marked as throwable, which could be quite a lot. So suspend operation could be quite painful because you will need to either have pre-allocated memory to drop that into, or allocate memory. Yeah. Yeah. You want a backing store basically in main RAM that can be swapped out to disk, but is also a copy in the VRAM.
I think the Nouveau guys will solve it for us.
As we keep getting up to more and more bigger cards, like AMD are announcing cards with a gig of VRAM. So it starts to get very, very messy, but we're working with AMD are starting to work with us now more as well as Intel. So at least we're trying to get both sides of that picture. Well, certain parts of GL, actually, we know this, because the current Mesa stack basically throws away everything that's in VRAM. It never assumes anything in VRAM. It just keeps a copy of everything. But that pretty much limits us to where we are now. There's an awful lot of GL operations that you can't just assume that. So we're trying to get, so we know for certain GL operations, yes, you don't need this information, but for certain ones we do. And it's just going to be a matter of deciding, hinting at the right time that we can throw these away on suspend and we'll be able to rebuild them later. Yeah, those sort of things. There's some sort of hint, but I don't think we have the full loop to go back to the app.
Yeah, we start failing applications aggressively.
So what part of this am I supposed to get for the 2.6.5?
As in this week.
As in this week?
The memory manager.
Okay. So no
mode setting yet. Basically, the memory manager, the TTM layer, we first submitted it, I'd say, about a year ago, maybe.
Yeah, it was a long time.
But we basically, what happened was Tungsten did a memory manager for the 915, and sort of nobody, we hadn't really time, no one got up to speed on how it worked, and I started porting it to Radeon, and then Intel started getting interested. So we finally figured out, that original interface probably wasn't as good as it could have been. And this is, it's one of those problems that what Aaron was talking about earlier is, we can't upstream this early because we're going to set an API in stone. It's a big problem because to get people interested in how it works, it needs to be upstream in the kernel because a lot of people, only really look at it or something when it actually lands. But we can't put it into the kernel, and we were happy with the API, which is taking us about a year from when the original code, the core code hasn't changed that much, but the user space API we've had to refine.
Yeah, every new user said, oh, I've got to change the interface.
Yeah.
So we
think we finally have at least a supportable interface. We may not be complete, but at least we know we can backwards compatible to it for the next, as long as we need to be, which is possibly the most use we can do. So yeah, for 2.6.25, we'll have the core memory manager and the Intel driver to support it. And also suspend and resume hooks for the Intel.
That's in there. And then for the mode setting stuff, we want to at least get feature parity with the 2D driver before we push that, which means fewer bugs and the support for the other outputs.
But yeah, basically from Red Hat's point of view, we want to do Fedora 9 with Intel mode setting. So we'll either want to be on our way towards upstream. It'll either be in my tree or it'll be, the next kernel will have it. We don't want to hang on to it for too long. But we sort of pushed most of it into Fedora so far, and we've been testing it. So
it should be easier than the memory management work.
Yeah, the memory management
touching as much of the stack.
The big problem will be the backwards compatibility. What happens? That's the two problems we have are whether we just do a config option to enable the new stuff going forward, and if you turn that config option and you still have old X Windows drivers. We don't turn it on by default. If the user turns it on, and then distros decide themselves, we're going to ship this user space, which can deal with the old and the new. So if you ship a new user space, it'll fall back with an old kernel. So it's just that you don't have that old kernel and old user, or new kernel and old user space.
I don't hear any screaming about the frame buffer drivers. No one is going to miss those?
Well, no, we don't really kill them.
Well, we don't kill them.
We actually have done...
not going to be used.
We have an Intel FB driver now that sits right on top of the DRM instead of doing its own separate world and deals with the memory manager and deals with everything. And it works. It's accelerated. That's pretty much what we did for Intel. We just let it use the memory manager and allocates a frame buffer. And
Jerome did some of that already.
Yeah. Regarding the whole backward compatibility, one thing that you can use maybe is rely more than just for the hoops thing, about this new KDE kernel graphic thing. And that is, as soon as somebody is trying to put you into the old KDE graphic, that person is going to blast your other configuration.
Yeah.
And so you do what has to be done to put your card in some kind of idle state.
You basically end up doing a suspend cycle and then letting X run and then doing a resume cycle when it gets out.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I know we had a discussion at Kernel Summit about doing a KDE Graphics 2 before, and you were sort of thinking we didn't need it, but I think we've talked about it since, and we were like, it's very hard to do because we can't trust that the current user space isn't going to do something really stupid to us.
Yeah, I mean, we couldn't reuse the existing KDE Graphics. We could do it in KDE Text, but I don't think we would get the same feature set as if we did a new one.
Matthew?
Well, I haven't talked to those developers.
Yeah, we haven't actually talked to them at any. The point is, yeah, we've used this when I originally did it was for to do with Mesa standalone. So I didn't have I had this gaming machine that had no X server. So and then someone said, we need dual head, and I went, I can't do that. I'll have to redesign the kernel and pay me for it, please. But it worked out. DirectFB should have no problems using this. It's what's really good about this system is it allows for this whole new we don't have to use X. The X server will become a process, doesn't eventually, not in this cycle, but pretty soon afterwards, it won't require root to run. It will mean the X server is just a rendering thing that will render X. It's no longer a mini operating system that sort of sits on top of Linux and does its own things with the hardware and stuff. The way it was meant to be when it was originally designed, but sort of about 20 years ago got detoured. No, all I'm actually doing as an example Cirrus driver, because QEMU has the Cirrus. So I want to actually see how small I can get it. But at the current system, Daniel wants to use it in the Nokia stuff. So
you get an inch basically from user space that looks like a lot like FB, but without the terrible API.
You implement what you need for your system. I mean, if you don't want a Mesa driver, you don't have to write one. But the advantage is if you do the mode setting code in the DRM, which you're going to have to do somewhere anyway, and then later you can add a 3D and not have to worry about, oh, we don't have a DRM driver.
Our requirements are just basic mode setting and displaying a nice logo within a couple of hundred milliseconds, and then later we can do X, but this is all identical to what's there with the frame buffer stuff already.
The thing is, the DRM at the moment, as it's currently structured, there is possibilities to, if you're only doing certain things, that you could remove large pieces of it. We haven't done it, but there's no reason that somebody couldn't decide, oh well, I'm only using the DRM to do the mode setting bit, and I actually don't really need this bit. And then we could actually sub-module parts of the DRM out into, you know,
sort
of for embedded systems.
But it's actually not
that big in the end of the day these days. You know, if you're skimping on maybe down to like 5K or 10K, it might be a problem. But if it's only in the 100K, 200K, it's not going to be a problem.
Matthew?
So you are making the possibility of having a GPU scheduler at some level. That essentially opens the door to having on chipsets that support dynamic clocking or frequency or voltage scaling of GPU, having sort of CPU correct play for the graphics cards.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that could be actually be done earlier than that, because the common paths are already going through the DRM. Take a Radeon table very well there. You could already know from the DRM in the current code that you're pretty much idle there, no common going through, and start talking with you. As long as you're the only one touching.
Yeah.
That's where the main problem is. And that's why also one of the arrows that was sort of deceiving in your section in our graph is you still have the 2D file to extract the hardware from X. That's not necessarily the case, especially it's not the case with Radeon.
Right. Well, that's true. I mean, so it depends on your driver, but and most of the drivers are going to do mode setting straight to the hardware too. But that depends on the driver.
The plan is that user space will not be privileged. That there will be no privileged X server. That's the goal. Well, actually, the goal from to see what Red Hat actually want to do at the end of this is to be able to do fast user switching on cubes. So this is the flashy goal of the reason I'm getting paid to work on it, is so that at the end, in two revisions of Fedora time, you can actually, because fast user switching at the moment, if anyone tries to use fast user switching, you realize how utterly broken it is, especially with open source drivers. There's no way to run 3D on the second head or the second user. There's, you know, Compiz doesn't work, so you know that's pretty much gone. So yes, we're cloning Mac OS X from boot to. Yes, pretty much.
And you also get flicker-free startup, right?
Flicker-free startup is the other goal.
Grub comes up, boots your kernel, you get one flick into the mode that you're going to be in.
Yeah, and then you stay in that mode the whole way up.
And if you're on LVDS, you won't get any flick. It'll just happen.
It's like an operating system from the 1990s.
Go ahead.